25 years ago this week, six Jesuit priests living in El Salvador made headlines around the world when 30 armed men in uniforms burst into their shared home and gunned them all to death. The priests had taught at Central American University and got caught in the middle of a decade-long civil war between the military-led government in El Salvador and guerrilla opposition forces. They were helping the sick and the poor and advocating for compromise and an end to the war. Their murder marked a turning point in the Salvadoran struggle, and their association with the ideals of liberation theology left a legacy that some people say changed Catholic thinking forever. Michael Lee is a professor of theology and a scholar of Latin American studies at Fordham University. He's also the author of Bearing the Weight of Salvation. Michael, thanks for joining us.
I'm glad to be here.
And Michael, before we talk about how and why these killings happened, take us back to 1989 and describe the political situation in El Salvador that led to this.
Well, in 1989, you were already 9 years into the Salvadoran Civil War, a horrible struggle in which, at that point, the United States had put already $4 billion of military aid. And really, the country had begun to experience a kind of fatigue, with each side unwilling to compromise, each side still holding out that they might eventually win this conflict, while really the ones who suffered the most were the vast majority of the population in the middle. So these Jesuits at this university were really outspoken in their efforts to try to find a negotiated settlement to this civil war.
They were advocates of liberation theology. Tell us what they advocated.
Well, in terms of their theology, it was simply this. If the Christian message talks about salvation, that talk about salvation isn't complete unless it talks about human liberation. So in a country in which the vast majority is suffering under poverty, oppression, and repression, tortures, kidnappings, etc., then the role of a Christian and the role of a Christian university is to speak out for justice, not as a nice aside to faith, but as intrinsic to it.
What happened the night these priests were killed?
Well, that night, soldiers entered campus and dragged these six priests and their housekeeper and her daughter from their rooms and executed them in cold blood.
This was the military itself that did this.
This was an elite unit of the Salvadoran military that was trained in the United States, the Atlacatl unit. And though at first there was denials about any knowledge of the assassinations, eventually it was seen and it's reported in the United Nations Truth Commission on the War that it was in fact members of the Salvadoran military who carried out these assassinations.
In fact, wasn't it a U.S. military advisor who eventually exposed the truth? And the reason the advisor knew that is because the U.S. had had that role in training the assassins?
In part, yes.
I think it's hard not to wonder, how were six priests advocating justice a threat to the government? Why couldn't they have just viewed them as a nuisance, and why did they have to resort to murder?
It's hard for us to imagine the kind of polarized society that the Salvadoran one represented at this time. But you had a rabid anti-communist right that saw labor organizing, that saw advocating for human rights, that saw even basic education as somehow inspired by communism. Catechists, priests, nuns were routinely arrested, tortured, and beaten for these kinds of offenses.
I remember these deaths very well. They just dominated the headlines. It was an enormous news story. Would you describe the impact of this massacre?
Well, it's remarkable because in 1980, of course, you have the assassination of the Archbishop, Oscar Romero. And that December in 1980, you had the rape and murder of four U.S. church women. So there was this great amount of publicity then. But then over the course of the war in the 80s, two Reagan administrations, and then the first year of the Bush administration, that kind of fatigue had begun to set in. And so these murders put El Salvador back on the front page, back at the center of conversation, and especially back at the question of what is this regime that is being supported here? What kind of ends are we trying to achieve here when priests are being murdered? So that was really made it such a significant event, and what most commentators say is the event that led to the peace treaty that would be signed in 92.
Right. It, in a sense, hastened the end of the war. Do you also think, Michael, that the killings backfired for the government in the sense that they ended up spreading the word of liberation theology even wider?
Absolutely. It's the classic case of trying to stomp out what you despise, but in doing so, you only spread its word. I think what's powerful about these martyrs, as they are called, is that they give us a concrete example of what liberation theology is lived out in practice. These weren't radicals. They weren't gun-toting priests. They were university intellectuals who were dedicating themselves personally and as an institution for peace and for justice in their country.
The Catholic Church was wary of the liberation theology movement because it was critical, basically, of the way the Catholic Church operated. How did these killings affect the Church?
It's a good question, you know, because the legacy of liberation theology has always been a mixed one. Yes, there was criticism from the Vatican, criticism from popes like John Paul II and Benedict XVI. But I think their legacy, as it continues on, continues to be a reminder of the power of this theology and of the relevance of that theology today. And I think Pope Francis, for one,
the first Jesuit pope, of course.
The first Jesuit pope.
The first pope from Latin America.
Exactly. And I think his proximity to poverty, his proximity to the situation that these Jesuits found themselves in is what gives him an understanding about the contribution of liberation theology that perhaps his predecessors didn't have.
And how do you think he expresses that?
He calls for a church of the poor and for the poor. He has criticized the way heartless capitalism functions in our world today. He's pointed to the problems of immigration, of a slave trade, of violence. And these are relevant issues that if Christians are to go by that name, need to live a faith that addresses them. And I think there's a power there, and I think that's an appeal, too, for so many people whose picture of Christianity is of, being locked away in church or abstract rules or merely sexual ethics. This kind of Christianity is something that's quite powerful.
Michael Lee is a professor of theology at Fordham University. Michael, thanks very much for talking with us.
Thank you.